You're listening to the Orlando Sentinel's College Gridiron 365 podcast. Hosts Brant Parsons and Matt Marshall give their perspective on the hottest topics in college football. Now let's get on with the show.
And we're back. After a couple podcasts off, we're back with a brand new podcast. I'm Brant Parsons with Matt Marshall. And we're going to do this podcast about coaches, hot seats, and changes. But first, we're recording this on Thursday, and Matt, there was breaking news today in our coverage area. We are, you know, based in Orlando, obviously, and it's official. The worst kept secret in college football the past couple weeks. The ACC Football Championship will be played at Camping World Stadium, the Citrus Bowl, on December 3rd in Orlando. And Matt, you and I, we've spent time talking about this on podcast. We've spent time talking about this on video. It was the one that made the most sense. And luckily, Central Florida Sports and the FHSAA and everybody involved were able to come to a deal. They're moving the high school championships to a single weekend, a three-day weekend, the weekend following, which is actually how it's going to be starting in 2017. Anyway, everybody's happy, and we get the ACC championship game. How about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really big coup for this community, you know, for Orlando, you know, to get the championship game here. Think about what December is going to be like in this area, Brant. You talk about the ACC championships. You still have the high school football championships. You've got three bowl games in the Cure, Russell Athletic, and Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl. I mean, that is a packed month of December. And then in February, you go into, you know, with the Pro Bowl, NFL Pro Bowl. So, I mean, honestly, this is going to be a fun time if you're a football fan here in the state of Florida.
I mean, just the thought of, we knew what was coming, but we are going to get one of the best, likely one of the best teams in the country playing in their conference championship game. You have to look at whoever's going to win the huge Louisville-Clemson game this Saturday. Likely the leader, the you know, the head of the pack, if you will, in the ACC, and they could possibly end up playing a team like Miami, who is reinvigorated under Coach Mark Richt. It's going to be possibly, if not the conference championship game to watch, and it's going to be right here in Orlando. And the fact that Orlando was able to pick this up, they're going to be able to put this game on in three months' time, certainly has to look good for Orlando going forward with the ACC, not just in football, but with any of the championships. We know the conference has a lot. We know that Orlando has made a bid for a lot of them. I think as a sports fan beyond football, this is a good thing for the city, for the area going forward with their relationship with the Atlantic Coast Conference.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you talked about with these games, you know, getting this game this year, obviously with everything going on, if North Carolina decides, you know, to continue on with their House Bill 2 situation, you know, there's a possibility Orlando could get this game even for longer. You know, maybe it becomes the permanent site for a while, or at least the site for the next, you know, immediate future. So this really does provide the, you know, a good boost for them, as you mentioned. There's still a basketball tournament that they've been, I'm sure, looking at. Orlando does host the NCAA first and second rounds this year, so they will not have, I'm sure, availability to do it this year. But, you know, down the road, there's all sorts of opportunities as well. And as you mentioned, you know, this provides a lot, not just in the sense of exposure for the community and for Orlando, but also for the fact financially. You know, Charlotte officials estimated last year the game generated close to $35 million of economic impact. So, you know, think about that coming around Christmas time. That's a nice little Christmas present for many of the retailers, hotel people, you know, restaurateurs in our area, to have that extra economic, you know, flow back into your coffers. So, I mean, again, all this together makes this a great win-win situation. And then you talk about the fact, as you mentioned, you're going to have a possibility of having maybe, you know, two top ranked teams going at it, whether it be Louisville, Clemson, Miami, North Carolina, whoever, Florida State. There's going to be some teams here as well. So I think you can expect it to be a sellout. I think you can expect it to be one of the biggest things we've seen probably since the Florida State Ole Miss game.
And when they fixed up, if you will, the Citrus Bowl, and they went through all the renovations, and it was with the promise that they were going to go after big time events, and they've been doing that. They've been doing that with the kickoff, you know, the kickoff classics that are lined up over the next couple years. It began this year, obviously, Florida State, Ole Miss, getting the ACC more of that commitment, showing that the Citrus Bowl is going to be in play for major events. I don't know that they're a player yet on the playoff scale. There's still some issues with parking and the stadium and such, but they said they were going to go after big-time games, and at least up to this point, they're delivering, and they've done so by bringing an ACC championship game here.
Yeah, and it also helps, too, I think, that, you know, because, you know, the Russell Athletic Bowl, you know, has that ACC tie-in, you know, when you have that tie-in for those games, I think that helps, you know, when it came to sitting down and maybe going after this game. As soon as it was announced that the ACC was moving the game, you know, Orlando became an immediate player, really got involved as well. Michael Strickland, who associate commissioner works for the ACC, used to work at Florida Central Sports, you know, with Steve Hogan and the guys, so he's very familiar. So he was kind of already in the ACC. He was familiar with Orlando. He was down here for the Florida State Ole Miss game. I spoke to him for a little bit, so he knows what the city can provide, so I'm sure that was a help. And then, you know, we're hearing that there wasn't, maybe Orlando was the only city, you know, in the state of Florida that was really interested in getting this game. So, you know, it was pretty much a slam dunk, it seemed like, from the beginning. And I think getting it here now, getting it going, offers an opportunity now for the city to showcase itself again and maybe, like you said, lock it in for a longer-term deal. And then maybe also show they can do other events here as well, because, again, I think this is a big deal. Anytime you can bring sporting events like this here, and anytime you can provide an economic impact to the community, I think it's always going to be good.
And now back to our regularly scheduled podcast. We did not do a recap podcast on Sunday because you were the UCF writer this weekend covering for our friend and colleague, Shannon Green. And so you saw UCF cost FIU head coach Ron Turner his job. And you come back Sunday, the first firing, if you will, of the college football season. Not surprising at all. If you saw FIU play against UCF, or if you saw them play in the other games, they're 0-4. They're a bad football team. They're a fundamentally poor football team. But then the news got even more shocking, perhaps, and as LSU fired Les Miles again, and this time it's going to stick. Les Miles done at LSU after a fluke ending, not a fluke ending, but a crazy ending to the game in Auburn, where both teams looked anemic on offense throughout the game, and some clock management issues down the stretch, which have always seemed to rear their ugly head around Les Miles, and running out of time on the final drive to give Auburn the win. Les Miles out at LSU, and instantly, Matt, the rumors begin, and you know the first name that comes up when you talk LSU is Florida State head coach Jimbo Fisher. Tom Herman, Houston's head coach, pops up there. I don't know where this will go. LSU does it not maybe in a financial state to go after those big names. Certainly, though, this is a prime job that is open. Before we get into who may take it, though, Matt, your thoughts on the timing of the Les Miles firing. You know, they wanted to fire him last year. The players and some of the people around the program petitioned, begged, whatever, got him to come back. Things didn't change. The offense was still poor. Still couldn't get a quarterback, and some upsetting losses to begin the season. So now they finally got rid of him. But so it was a quick trigger and a not so quick trigger to get rid of Miles out there at LSU.
Yeah, I think it was. You know, I mean, I've never been a fan of firing a coach mid-season. And to be honest with you, you know, again, to do it, you know, with the game week coming up is always difficult, you know, because I think then, you know, the players have to make the adjustment. The coaching staff has to make an adjustment. You know, I think it's always difficult to happen. You know, LSU didn't have their bye week until about 4 or 5 weeks from now after the Florida game, after Ole Miss. So there was a potential it could have got worse. I think what, you know, LSU administrators were concerned with is, let's say you're upset let's say you let Les Miles go all the way to the end of the season, and let's say LSU beats Ole Miss, and let's say they beat Alabama, and let's say they beat Florida, you know, and all of a sudden now you're back into being a top 10 team, and there's so much positivity surrounding that that, you know, it would be really hard for them then in the offseason to make the move to fire Les Miles. And I think going back to this, I think what really cost Les Miles his job was he was really too faithful to Cam Cameron, his offensive coordinator. I felt like if he makes a move in the offseason, if he hires a new offensive coordinator, if he changes up the offensive scheme and they get to developing a quarterback better, I think Les Miles is still the coach, you know, at LSU. I think they, you know, they were in the game against Wisconsin. They were in the game with Auburn. You know, again, you're talking about a total of 8 points, you know, separating both those losses. So I think if they win those games, you know, again, it's a different story. But to be connected, to be committed to that, to Cam Cameron, I think that hurt him in the long run. And in a way it's good, you know, you're faithful to your assistants, but in a way it's bad. You have to make changes, and I think that's something that we saw. Obviously, this offense is very anemic, and their quarterback situation is horrible. So, you know, timing's never good, but I think looking at the situation, Ed Orgeron obviously stepping in as the interim head coach. He's done it before, did it at USC. Always the bridesmaid, never the bride, so to speak. It'll be interesting to see if his name climbs up the ladder when it comes to this job as well.
And I think you nailed it on both points. I think there were concerns with the LSU offense, and Les Miles decided to address them by not addressing them. And I think also the powers that be at LSU never stopped wanting to get rid of Les Miles last year. And like you said, this was the right time. And if they turn things around and they do score a couple upsets and rally on the season, which is entirely possible, it's not a bad football team, then it makes it harder, again, just like last year, harder to get rid of them. So Les Miles is out. Where does LSU go from here, and how does this affect the college football coaching landscape, Matt?
Well, I think it affects it a lot. I mean, you look at the fact that, you know, you're hearing the names being mentioned. You're talking about Tom Herman for Houston. I don't think that LSU, with the state of Louisiana having their financial problems, I don't know if LSU's got the cash to go after Tom Herman. I think Houston now is you know, already making him a $3 million a year coach. I think they could throw more money at him if they really wanted to, if they thought he was going to leave. You know, so I don't necessarily know if Herman's the guy. You know, they've talked about Jimbo Fisher. He has history with LSU, being the former offensive coordinator. I think, again, it would take a lot of money to get Jimbo Fisher to come to LSU. And I think Jimbo, you know, generally likes being at Florida State. I don't think there's a case of, you know, he's not happy and he would want to leave just to go back to LSU. But, again, I mean, Jimbo's going to be a hard one to get as well. You know, we mentioned Ed Orgeron. You know, he's a guy that's not going to cost you a lot of money. He's familiar with the program. He's a Louisiana, you know, he's a Louisiana guy. So, you know, he makes sense in some regards, especially if LSU comes out strong. But I'm thinking if you make this move to get rid of Les Miles, you're looking for a big-name coach. And, you know, you're not looking for a guy who maybe is, you know, like an Orgeron, who's been a, you know, an assistant coach most of his life. You're looking for a guy who's got coaching experience. Other names that come up, Art Briles. I think that's too toxic for LSU, especially with everything going on. I don't think you want to bring, you know, Art Briles in. Lane Kiffin, his name has been there. And I think you're going to hear some other names. Mike Gundy, Oklahoma State. Gary Patterson, TCU. So once again, being a top, you know, top 10 program and being in the SEC, I think you're going to hear all the usual suspects' names come up, as we've heard the last couple of years when big jobs open up.
With the money situation, with the coaches you mentioned, a lot of them very happy. Is there? I could see LSU going the route of bringing up an up and coming coach, maybe not an up and coming coordinator, but looking to the Group of Five, much as Florida has in their successful hires with Urban Meyer, which, you know, obviously we know how he came up through Utah and Bowling Green, even with Jim McElwain, and, you know, bringing up coaches that have succeeded at that level, maybe not as expensive as a big name guy, but not a completely green behind the ears, if you will. That, to me, with not having any connection to LSU, but knowing the program and how big it is and how important it is and where it is, but also knowing the financials of it, shouldn't we be looking at maybe some group of five guys? I know the Jimbo Fishers, that makes the nice, you know, that makes the news, it makes it tickle a little and people react to it, and it's the big name and that sort of thing. But couldn't you see him just going to that group of five level and bringing up one of those up and coming coaches and seeing what he can do at LSU?
Yeah, you could, and there's some good ones out there. I mean, there's nothing to say. Listen, a guy in Western Michigan, PJ Fleck, you know, whose name's come up several times in the offseason, done an amazing job with Western Michigan. You know, they've improved. He's very high energy, high octane type of coach. You know, he would come in and fit really well, getting the fan base energized. Again, you know, you look around at some of the other ones. I think maybe if Scott Frost had done a little bit, you know, if he'd been here another year or two and UCF had done more, I think you'd probably hear Scott Frost's name thrown out there as well. The problem is when you look at the group of five, you know, you're really not seeing guys who really kind of jump off the table that make you think, you know, wow, that's the guy we should hire. Brian Harsin at Boise State, maybe, you know, who's done a pretty good job at Boise State stepping in after Chris Peterson left. But no one's had that kind of experience, so to speak, with working at a major college, an SEC program. You know, and it's a little different from that group of five situation to walking in. I mean, McElwain, I think, obviously had the luxury of working, you know, with Nick Saban at Alabama, so he had the experience of being in an SEC program. It's going to be a little harder to find one of those guys to make that move over. You know, maybe you look at a guy like a DJ Durkin, maybe when he was at, you know, Michigan going to Maryland. Urban Meyer guy who was with, you know, Florida as well. But again, you're talking about offensive-minded guys, and I don't know if there are a lot of them out there right now at the group of five level. I think that's why Herman's name has been obviously at the top of the list. It'll be interesting to see. I believe that at some point Herman's going to leave Houston, unless Houston gets into the Big 12, for instance. Because I just think, yes, and that's, you know, that's going to be the move. So I think eventually it's going to happen. So if you're going to make that move and you don't think you're going to get in the Big 12, maybe now's the time.
Yeah, I would say we know that the Big 12 may not be expanding. I think if that happens and Houston is left out, then I don't know how Tom Herman's days may be numbered, but there may be something with someone with more money that ends up luring him away. We'll be watching the LSU job. And Matt, the other question, and we're, you know, we're deep enough into the season. We're starting conference play pretty much throughout the country now. Where are the hottest seats as you're looking across the college football landscape? Where could the axe be falling elsewhere across the country as the season goes on here?
Well, I think the next one to watch is Mark Stoops at Kentucky. You know, I mean, they're off to a really rough start. You know, he did come in with a lot of fan support, did a lot of, you know, drew a lot of attendance, you know, for the early spring games when he first got there. They've done a lot to put some money into the facilities there. But, you know, they haven't been bowl eligible since 2010. They haven't won more than five games since 2010. They struggled this year, losing to Southern Miss, you know, and looked really horrible against Florida. You know, he's a guy right now, you just wonder. I know Kentucky's not a football school, it's more about basketball, but you just wonder, you know, how long are they going to stick around with him? With things the way they are in the SEC, the big, you know, knock against, you know, firing him is the fact that the school would have to pay close to $12 million, you know, for a buyout. So it's a hefty price to pay, plus hiring another coach. But they're playing Alabama this week. My assumption is Alabama's going to roll all over them. If it's an ugly, ugly loss and Kentucky looks like, you know, they have no fight in them, I wouldn't be shocked to see Stoops go as well. I still think Gus Malzahn at Auburn is on the hot seat. I think even if Auburn finishes like 7-5 or 8-4, I think it's going to be tough to keep Malzahn there, at least without him having to make coaching changes, you know, on the assistant coaching side. Maybe Rhett Lachey's offensive coordinator maybe out the door. Again, a hefty buyout for him and his staff. Maybe we'll keep him there for another season. And I'm going to throw a name at you that not a lot of people are talking about, but I think it's worth watching, and that's Clay Helton at USC. I know USC has the toughest schedule in college football, but they've looked bad against, you know, losses to Alabama, to Stanford, Utah. The players look confused at times. They look like they're being poorly coached. They've already made a quarterback change four games into the season. This is a team that if USC finishes, 4-8, or 3-9, that's not USC football. And I would imagine they would probably try to get rid of Clay, maybe with the idea of going after a bigger name guy like a Tom Herman or someone like that.
And that's a place I could see Tom Herman actually going to, because I think they would throw some money at him. I agree with you on Malzahn and Auburn, and I know they got the win over LSU, but I got to tell you, if anybody watched that game, that was a tough game to watch, and Auburn won the game kicking only field goals, six of them, six made field goals to win that game, and I'm not seeing much spark there in Auburn, and if they had lost LSU, he may have been done. But again, you talk about the Kentucky situation, same thing in Auburn. It's going to cost a lot of money. These schools have really backed themselves into corners with some of these deals, with these buyouts to get the coaches that they wanted, to reward the coaches perhaps that they wanted. But that is what could keep Kentucky or Auburn from making a move until they're just absolutely desperate. If there wasn't the buyout in Kentucky, I could see them firing Stoops at halftime this weekend, because I think Alabama's going to beat them, just so soundly and embarrassingly. But that buyout, those buyouts that are in there in college football certainly, I think, affect the landscape some. Matt, we're not going to talk a lot about this weekend. We spent a lot of time talking about the ACC and coaches, and we've got a lot to do to get ready for the weekend. But three top 10 games this weekend. Which of those three are you most excited to watch, and which of those three do you think we're going to learn the most from this weekend?
Well, I think the one obviously is the one that everyone is going to probably watch is Louisville Clemson. I just think because you've got a guy like Lamar Jackson, what he's been able to do. We know he's dynamic. We know he's a guy that is the Heisman favorite. But again, outside of Florida State, they haven't really faced anybody, and this is their first major road test. And it'll be interesting to see how they perform at Death Valley. Can they continue this hot streak? If Louisville rolls over Clemson, does that make them, is it good enough to put them maybe in the top spot in next week's poll? Because I think a lot of people will be watching that to see. And then I think if they do roll in this game, does Lamar Jackson pretty much have the Heisman won unless he gets hurt and unless Louisville stumbles down the road? I'm looking at that one. I think Stanford-Washington on Friday night's a good matchup because, again, it's the Pac-12. The Pac-12 isn't as secure, I don't think, as the ACC or the Big Ten is when it comes to heading towards the playoff. I think they need one of those teams to really kind of step up and continue marching forward undefeated, whether it's Stanford or Washington. If they start beating up on each other like they did last year and start suffering some of those late-season losses, I think the Pac-12 could be left out of the discussion as well.
And the other game, of course, Wisconsin-Michigan, which is the one I'm looking forward to seeing, not just because of my Big Ten roots, but this is going to be a battle of mites, as I said on our prediction show yesterday. Wisconsin's defense, we know how good they are, holding teams to around 12 or 13 points a game, forced Michigan State last weekend into four turnovers, capitalize on those turnovers, and Michigan comes in with a roaring offense, scoring at least 45 points in every game, and a defense that has been pretty stellar so far, too, under Jim Harbaugh. That is a Big Ten marquee game, and Wisconsin in the middle of a stretch where they played Michigan State and they have Ohio State in 2 weeks, but they've already knocked off two top 10 teams this year, going for a third on Saturday in Ann Arbor. That's the game that I am looking forward to seeing, because I want to see if that Wisconsin defense really is for real. We know what they can do. This will be their first huge test, though. It's one thing to shut down LSU's offense. A lot of the schools can do that. It's another thing to shut down this Michigan offense. That's the game I'm looking forward to, and obviously Clemson-Louisville, everybody's going to be watching that one on Saturday. And on Sunday, Matt, we'll do this again, and we'll review what happened on Saturday with another podcast. How's that sound?
That's great. I mean, I think there'll be a lot of good things happening, and if it's been like it has been the first 4 weeks, we're bound to get some sort of craziness happening that will maybe shake some things up. And I think as we get closer to the halfway point of the season, we're going to see more of these teams really start to pull ahead or fall behind, maybe overrated or underrated, when we talk about some of these programs.
Like Georgia. Overrated.
Overrated for sure. And I think there's some other ones. I mean, Houston plays Thursday night, you know, against UConn. I think that's a good team to see how Houston performs, you know, again, on a stage where, you know, a lot of people are going to be watching against an inferior opponent, so to speak. So they got to handle business. And, you know, Notre Dame, you know, I mean, if Notre Dame loses to Syracuse this weekend, it's the beginning of the end for Brian Kelly. So there's still a lot of storylines that'll be here. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see a couple more coaches maybe get fired as the season continues to move on.
All right, and Matt, you and I will talk about everything on Sunday on the next podcast. Make sure you like us, share us on social media, tell a friend, tell an enemy, and thanks for subscribing if you already have. For Matt Michelle, I'm Brent Parsons. Thanks for listening to College Gridiron Podcast, brought to you by OrlandoSentinel.com.
The College Gridiron 365 Podcast is produced by the Orlando Sentinel and hosted by Brent Parsons and Matt Michelle. Come back often and be sure to add the College Gridiron 365 podcast to your RSS and iTunes feeds. Follow everything college football at OrlandoSentinel.com.